anyway, today's November 11th, taping Shmuel Bet. And Shaul died back in Shmuel Aleph, the last parak of Shmuel Aleph, by falling on his sword. Okay? He asked his armor bearer to do it for him, but the armor bearer was scared to do so. Okay? And Shloch Charbacha Utekareni Ba. Pierce me with your sword, right? Because I don't want these vicious Philistines to capture me alive. They will torture me. It'll be a terrible Chilul Hashem. We discussed the aspects of suicide, whether he was allowed to be doing this, but he did not want to be captured alive. The Nosei Kalim, doesn't name him, just says his Nosei Kalim refused to do so. He couldn't do it. So what did Shaul do? If you just go back with me to Perek Lamed Aleph, you'll see. Shaul, Vayikach Shaul es hacherev, Vayipol aleha. He took the sword, and he fell on it. You hear that saying, to fall on your sword means to take one for, you know, for the team or for someone else. He fell on his sword. All right? It doesn't say what happened to him after he fell on the sword. Can you just assume? Because look at the next pasuk. Vayar Nosei Kalev ki meis Shaul. When the Nosei Kalev saw that Shaul died, vayipol gam hu al charbo, vayomas imo. He also fell on his sword and died with him. Can you see a difference between pasuk Dalet and pasuk Hey? Because when Shaul falls on his sword, what does it say? Just says Vayipol aleha. When the boy falls on his sword, what does it say? Vayipol gam hu al charbo.
Vayamas.
Is it possible that even though the beginning of pasuk Hey says Vayar Nosei Kalev ki meis Shaul, that Shaul really wasn't dead? If he wasn't really dead, why does it say Vayar Nosei Kalev ki meis Shaul? Because the lad just thought he was dead. Do you agree with this? Is it possible? If you don't agree, I want you to say so. Is it possible that the Bible could say, and when the lad saw that Shaul died, so he fell on his sword too, and died. When Shaul falls, it just says he fell on his sword. In other words, Shaul didn't die at all. Right? Shaul did not die when he fell on the sword. So why does it say it when the boy saw that he died? Because sometimes the Bible tells us something from the standpoint of the person in the pasuk. He didn't really die. The boy thought he died. So it says, when the boy saw that Shaul died, so he fell on his sword as well. So maybe Shaul survived this. Right?
I don't understand. It says, when I heard the son Shaul, right? He said Shaul died. And it says, by Paul Gampal Chargo, by Emma Kimo. How do we see that Shaul doesn't really die?
I wouldn't say that from reading this pasuk. Wait, we're going to read Parak Shmuel Beis, and we'll see something there, okay? That we have to question. Right? This also may depend on what made Shaul take his own life here. Remember what the witch told him the day before?
Depends on whose interpretation you want.
Okay, but assuming Shaul thought that she was really calling back Shmuel. He said to him, tomorrow you will be with me, with your sons. In other words, Shaul knew that it was curtains. Right? Right? Shaul knew that that's... You agree? Shaul knew he was going to die that day. But there's more than that. Look at, go back a little further. It says, Vatzichbad Pasuk Gimel. I'm back in Perek Lamed Aleph right now. Vatzichbad HaMelchama El Shaul Vayimtza'u HaMorim Anoshim Bakoshes. And the archers found him. That's nebulous. That's not quite clear. What do you think it means to say that the archers found him? Vayochel ma'od mehamorim. And he was greatly frightened from the archers. What does it mean that the archers found him? And if, remember, he's alone with this one lad. If archers have found him, no, what might that mean?
It means that they killed him.
So an archer to find you means that they shot an arrow and the arrow actually hit him. He's already mortally wounded. Or it could mean they found his hiding space. That might even be worse. If they found his hiding space, how long must it be before they actually storm the place and take him? How long would you give that? How far could someone shoot an arrow? What?
100 feet.
All right, but so how long is it going to take from the time that they know where he's hiding to the time they reach him?
5 minutes.
Not a great deal of time. Not a whole lot of time for what we're about to read in Shmuel Bet to have taken place. So let's read it.
So hold on. Why do we bring up this archer example?
Because we're going to.
Wait,
okay, read right now, very beginning of Shmuel. All right. Vayechare mot Shaul v'David shav me'akotet Amalek. David was fought against Amalekim at the end of Shmuel Aleph. Shaul was killed by the Philistines, and they hanged his body, his headless body, up in the town square in Beit Sha'an, together with his three sons, and some very brave men from Yabesh Gilad, whom Shaul had protected. Remember we discussed how Shaul protected their right eyes from being removed by the Ammonites, right? And Shaul protected them, and they returned the favor by very courageously coming during the night to remove the bodies from the town square, and they carried them down to Givat Shaul for burial. Right?
That's the only test he did well by, right? The three tests that was marshaled the people against them.
So. Right, against the people of Ammon. Right, and united them. Okay. So, David is coming back from this battle with Amalek. Yishev David b'Tziklag yamim shnayim. He was in a place called Tziklag for 2 days. V'yibar mashlishi v'hinei ish ba min ha'machane me'im Shaul u'v'gadov kru'im v'adamal roshav. A man came from the camp of Shaul. His clothing was torn, and there was adama al rosha. Now, why would he put dust? He's mourning. It seems that he's mourning, or in the very least, he's trying to show that he's mourning.
Is adama
not
part of the same thing?
Yeah. But Yibavo el David v'yipol ha'tzav ishtachu. He came to David and he bowed down to David onto the floor. Where are you coming from? I have escaped from the camp of Israel. What's going on there? Please tell me. The Jews are escaping. They're fleeing from the Philistines, and many of them have perished. And Shaul is dead, and his son Yonasan is dead. Good news or bad news for David?
Half
and half. My best friend died. Good news is because I'm about to be king. It's amazing. The halacha says that if a man hears that his parents die, he has to say one bracha, baruch dayan ames, and the second bracha is shechianu, I'm about to inherit. Ostensibly, you should wait till after, at least till after the shiva starts to say another bracha, because you're not supposed to make bracha. During Aninus. So that David says to him, I love David, may I have the bargain? So he says, clan. Vayomer David el hanar hamagid lo. Eich yodato ki meis sho'ol bihono sabano. How do you know? David's testing him to make sure he's telling the truth. How do you know that Shaul's dead? Vayomer hanar hamagid lo. Nikro nikresi bahara gilboa b'hinei sho'ol nisha'on al chanito. I just happened to be passing by Hara Gilboa, and Shaul, he doesn't say Shaul HaMelech, he just says Shaul was leaning on his spear. What did we say that Shaul fell on?
Sword.
Spear is very different from a sword, right? What did you say? So I see that Shaul is leaning on his spear. If you wanted to take your life, is it smarter to lean on a spear or a sword? Probably a sword. Take more from you. Someone else could just split my throat, but it takes a lot to fall on a sword. You're going to die slowly. Right? A spear, maybe even more slowly. A spear will probably fall right through you. It'll go out your back and hurt you even more. Slow, terrible way to die. But that's where I found him. And you know what? He was still alive. And chariots were closing in on him. He says nothing about what? That if they were in distance to actually hit Shaul, and they knew his hiding place, right? How far could they be? Notice he then mentions nothing about archers. He says that the chariots were closing in. V'ifen acharav v'yireini, and he turned around and he saw me, an irony because he's from Amalek, this kid. V'yikroi lai v'omar hineini, and I said, here I am, v'yomar mi'ata, v'yomar ilav Amaleki anochi, I'm an Amaleki, who's alive because you didn't fully get rid of him. V'yomar ilai, and he said to me, Amod no alai, umos seini, stand here and kill me. Ki achazani hashavatz, the terror has gripped me. This word shavatz, you see it? It's a hapax the gamana. You know what that means?
Right.
Tell us how it appears in the Bible. Shavatz. It means by the context, it means terror, agony, or something like that. Ki cholot nafshibi, I just have very little life left in me. Please take me, finish me off. So I stood above him and I killed him. I finished him off. And I knew he could not live after what he had falling on his spear. So I took his crown and I took his bracelets. A king used to wear these big long bracelets here, right? Made of gold. And I bring them to you. Now, no one can deny that he has the crown and the bracelets, right? How did he come to have them? He found them. The king probably tossed them someplace, right? So that he wouldn't be recognized.
Doesn't Chazal say that it's Tzfinia?
It's crown. Yeah, there is such a parish, but that's not the pshat here. Right? I have his crown and his bracelets. Now, what's the point of giving those over to David? Think with me here. What? Yeah, but what is he? Assuming that people act out of a certain self-interest, what's his self-interest in giving these things over to David? What?
He'll reward him. You kill my enemy and you're
specifically, he'll reward him with more than
not killing him.
The value
of those things. Because he could theoretically go to a nice pawn shop and get good money for them. Right? The David will theoretically reward me with more than this. Because this child, this lad, is demonstrating the position and opinion that David is very thrilled with the death of Shaul. And David, we're going to see the consummate politician, David is going to have to show everybody that I am not happy with the death of Shaul. And I'm not saying it's politics alone. I think it goes well beyond politics.
Passionate.
David is passionate about this. David does not want anybody to think that I am happy with the death of Shaul. It's part of David's it's just a moral system.
Isn't he living that? He's angry at this kid for saying that he killed Shaul.
Does he believe the kid? Do you believe the kid? That's what, now you see what we're reading this. Is it possible that the kid's telling the truth? Based on what we read in Perek Lamed Aleph? It says he fell on his sword and died. It didn't say he died. So he fell on his sword and the kid saw that he died, so he fell on his sword and died with him. Right? It just doesn't say Be'pol al-Chabo v'yamas. Understandably, you don't usually die when you fall on the sword. Maybe because Shaul was big and strong and the kid was a small little guy, so when he fell on his sword, Be'pol v'yamas. When Shaul fell on the sword, he didn't immediately die. But the boy, remember the lad in Perek Aleph that we just read, says he fell on his spear. Is it possible that the lad did not actually see Shaul at all? But he has his bracelet. He has his bracelet in his head and his crown because he found them someplace. Shaul tossed them. Didn't want to be found. You're not going to be escaping with a crown on. Right? So if it's possible that the kid just found them and he fabricated this story, right, in order to curry favor with David, that's going to go. That's not a smart thing. That's not going to go over well. Okay.
Are we saying he definitively did? I mean, is that a contradiction between the spear and definitive proof?
Yeah.
They did.
I think it's not. I don't think it's proof. It's testimony. I think the boy. And you know what? What actually happened, we'll never know. I think we can determine whether David thinks it happened. And I think David does not think it happened.
So he thinks that this boy's story is questionable.
It's false, but I'm going to kill him for bragging about it. And thinking that he's currying favor with me by doing this. Now, I don't think there's enough evidence in chapter 1 to draw this conclusion. But there is evidence in chapter 4 to draw this conclusion. What is that? I'll tell it to you now. In chapter 4, two men make their way into the king's palace. Not David, because after Shaul, a son of his ruled for 2 years. His name was Ish-bosheth. Ring a bell? Ish-bosheth. And two people from Binyamin Davka killed Ish-bosheth, took his head, and presented the head to David. Here is the head of the son of your enemy. Thinking erroneously, like this lad, that
it's
going to make David very happy and he'll get rewarded. David responded as follows with one of the 10 Kavachomers in Tanakh. I am certainly going to kill these two. Because back earlier, when someone just pretended to inform me about Shaul's death, I killed him. In other words, David speaks as if though he is only informing me. I don't believe he actually killed him. Just someone who informed me of killing the king, I killed him. How much more so will I kill someone for actually killing the king? No one should think that I am happy or, worse, ordered the hit on these guys. You see, here's the problem. Remember back in Shmuel Aleph how David convinced the Philistines that he was on their side? What was he saying?
Shaul's my enemy.
Shaul's my enemy too.
My enemy is my friend.
And when David was presenting him with various treasures, David kept telling him, this is not measures, this is in the text. David kept telling him, oh, these are the treasures, these are the booty of the spoils I'm taking from Shaul's armies after I killed him. Right? So the king of the Philistines said, he has so besmirched his name amongst the Israelites that there's no way they'll ever take him again. I'll be happy to have him. Without realizing that he was actually taking them from Amalek, from Aram, and other places like that, and presenting them as if though they were Jewish spoils. So they don't have communication like we have today. To what extent is, you know, whose side is David on? David has to make it very clear to everybody that he did not help the Philistines kill Shaul. Because everyone in Israel knew that David was touchy-feely close with the king of Philistia at this time. Right? Is it possible that David even gave them information on how to get Shaul? Right? You get it?
Why would he have to make clear to the Philistines he didn't kill Shaul?
Not only clear to the Philistines, clear to the Israelites, he's going to rule over them soon. I don't want to rule over people who think that I betrayed them by handing their king over to the enemy. The nation that David was so busy helping with all this spoils, right, is about to kill the king of Israel. David found himself in a very uncomfortable spot. This is where he had to be. Moab wasn't an option. There was no place in Israel I could endanger by having them help me, right? So he went back to the Plishtim, right? Which he already was forced out of earlier. David Bishav Stovus to Melech Melech Begushev Yelach, that he had to make himself appear as crazy to get out.
So what reason? This is the only reason why he so averse to the idea of him being happy with it?
Right, so he has to make it very clear to everybody that when I rule over you, I don't want anyone in Israel thinking that I had a hand in the capture of Shaul. But remember, when they said, now you'll prove your mettle with us. Now you'll prove that you're on our side by actually killing Shaul. They told him that. We'll capture him and you kill him. Consider the following, the Havdil. Let's say a cop goes undercover, right? And he's on a 2-year sting to try to undo a whole big drug ring, right? And then the word gets around that he's really a cop. And they confront him when he goes, how can you think I'm a cop? All these years I've been helping you smuggle drugs. How can you think I'm a cop? And he goes, okay, here's how you can prove you're a cop. That you're not a cop. We just took a hostage from the police force. We wanted to teach him a lesson, right? We're going to let you kill him. Sweet, but crunch time.
This is a very puzzling answer to the question, to the dilemma, right? Because I thought we were getting towards, oh, Doug was like very pious, he didn't want anyone to think that he was happy with a king's death. That was the notion that was sort of being put forth by this bragging that the lad did. So, but with this explanation, why would he be upset at all the bragging, right? I mean, okay, fine, he'd only be upset with the bragging because he didn't want people to think that he betrayed the nation. But then, he's sort of killing a lad for no reason, right?
So Rambam actually asks this question in the Mishnah Torah. How could he kill him on his own admission?
You're allowed to.
He said he killed him on. So Rashi says he killed him because he was an Amaleki. It's a command to kill an Amaleki. But he's a Ger Amaleki. He says he's a Ger Amaleki.
He converted.
He's a Jewish man. But he was born of Amaleki parents. Amaleki is allowed to convert. We've asked him at least.
He confessed that he killed Shaul.
Right, you can kill someone on his own confession. It's interesting, it's like Palgina Dibura. He used his information about Shaul being dead to accept the fact that I'm king now. I mean, I've been king for a long time, but now he can't do anything about it. But he just felt that if you're bragging and you think that I'm happy with this, I have to show everybody clearly that I'm not happy. Does that mean he would have let him live otherwise? I can't tell this. I'm not there, but there could be a number of reasons why David did this. But one thing is clear is that throughout Shmuel Bet, you will get political lessons about how to run a kingdom and what things to avoid. They're very clear. If David has to have like the called Kiddush Hashem, call whatever you want. If David has to have the picture out there to make sure that the opinion out there is, right, that I'm not a traitor, then he'll do what he has to do and we'll get that picture out. Right? Woe betide a nation. I mean, look, the fact is that the last six kings of the northern kingdom, right, you know there were two kingdoms? How did they become king? By killing the king before him. Right? That's a roguish nation. I'm not saying a nation is necessarily roguish if a leader is assassinated. That happened in Israel, it happened in America. But it would be a roguish nation if after killing Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald became the next president.
John Wilkes Booth.
Or John Wilkes Booth or anyone else. You know what I'm saying? That's a roguish nation. You kill the king and then you become king. Right? So I don't even want anyone to think, since I do intend to be the next king, I don't want anyone to even think that I wanted the king dead. He's my father-in-law. I could have killed him a number of times and I never chose to. Yes?
Isn't that part of the reason why the people aren't
Yes, it seems a beautiful. Now you can argue that his doleful, get it? That his doleful countenance in this chapter, get it, guys, is because of the loss, not of Shaul, but because of Yonatan, right? Adarav, Shaul's death is a big load off my shoulders. Not to mention now I'm going to be king, right? So it's like Shechianu over getting to become king, but Baruch Dynamis over losing the king. Nobody used to say, the king is dead, long live the king. Yeah. Right? Someone takes over immediately. Right? So David rips his clothing, he fasts with his men, and now look at Pasuk Gimel. V'yomer David al ha'nar ha'magid lo, Eimi ze atzah, where are you from? V'yomer ben ish ger ha'maleki anochi. Now he doesn't even say I'm a Ger Amaleki. I'm the son of a Ger Amaleki. I'm the son of a Ger Amaleki. So I will tell you that there are different opinions in Chazal whether we can accept Gerim from Amalek. The Rambam Paskins, yes. Rashi says yes. The Gemara Gittin says, "B'nei Malav Shel Haman Limdu Torah B'nei Brak." Some say that Rabbi Kiva is even descended from them. And still, David says, "V'emir lev David, ech lo yoreis l'shlach yotcha l'shachesis mishiach Hashem." And to be proud of it. I mean, what would you do? Anybody, not the king of Israel. You see someone who's mortally wounded, right? Maybe he's already hit by an archer also, by an arrow. Right? He's mortally wounded. He begs you to finish him off because I don't want to be tortured by the Philistines. Right? It's not because he did that. I have to explain it this way. It's because he seems to be proud of it. He seems to be bragging. He thinks he's going to get more of a gift from me than the value of this crown and bracelets. I mean, come on. He's in possession. He's in possession of the real thing. Right? He's in possession of something of tremendous value. And he's giving it up because he thinks he's going to get something of greater value from me. And I have to dispel that position. Come in and pegabo. V'yemer David elav, damcha aroshecha kipicha onavacha lemor anochi mosati es Mashiach Hashem. Your blood is on your own head for admitting that you killed the anointed of God. And then the rest of the parable speaks of David's dirge over his beloved friend and the king of Israel. Yes?
Again, this is still very inconsistent with the basis of David's concern. He's taking somewhat of a moral stance here, when in fact he's simply acting out of political motivation. So he's saying, oh, you don't want to kill him on account of...
Let's be willing to admit that there could be multiple reasons for David doing this, but
the political reason is just more of a subtle reason.
Well, you know, when Avner was assassinated, chapter 3, and David again sings a dirge for Avner. Look at the last pasuk in that paragraph. It says, "Vayedu kol ha'am b'chol Yisrael b'yom ahu." I think that's put there for a reason. It's Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Gimel Lamed Zayin. Beidu kol ha'am b'chol Yisrael b'yomahu. Everyone in all the people in Israel knew that day. Ki lo ha'isa me'hamelech lo ha'misis Avner ben Ner. It was not of the king's intention to have Avner killed. You see, it's one and the same here. Get it? He has to show everybody. And you know what? I'm sure David didn't want Avner killed. And I'm sure David isn't happy with Shaul being killed. But there's more at hand here.
There's perception. The Dhamma is teaching us a very important political point. And those who aren't sensitive to that political point don't make it politically. King is definitely a political position. Right? Is that if there is a misperception, you have to answer it. You have to clarify it. You have to clear it. Did that misperception need to be cleared by killing this lad? I'm not going to second guess it, but... Right? My evidence is bolstered by chapter 4, where David seems to be saying, I'm killing these two guys because they actually killed him as a kavachomer. Because back in chapter 1, he was just a mevaser, implying that Abimelech actually killed him, finished him off. Right?
Yes. So when we started off talking about the inconsistency between the report given by...
the actual facts in chapter 31 and this report.
So the reason why we pointed it out was because it just looks like he's... Just to show that his attitude is just not something that David's going to be happy with. Not so much to show that maybe he was lying, but more so to show that he was bragging, and then David has to set an example by sort of...
Hey, what's the point of giving him the bracelet? Do you have something great
right, that also is a big red flag.
Just go home and then just, you know...
And he also, but just by indicating, by giving him the stuff, he indicated that also that the king would be thrilled with the...
And reward me with something more of greater value. The Chanit and the Cherev, that's a close reading. I think, again, it's little pieces of evidence. That's what a good lawyer does when he's trying to build a case. And convince a jury, you guys are the jury, the commentaries are the jury, of whether this guy really is really indicating the facts or just something that he is fabricating in order to make the case. You ever see the movie 12 Angry Men? You ever see that?
Yeah.
It's a great depiction of, you know, what so many people are so sure of. And then one person starts to break down the foundations of what everyone believed in that jury. He's not a lawyer, he's one of the jurors. Right? I'm talking about the lawyer just put on play recently, a couple years ago. Yes.
How did David know that he was lying? Because he didn't know, he doesn't have the text in front of him that Shaul
built.
That's a good question.
So David certainly can't use the Chanit and the Cherev as evidence, right? Intuition. And,
I mean, for us it's clear, but.
Yeah. The Rambam asks, there's certainly no death penalty for what the kid did. First of all, it's a confession. You can't kill someone on confession. Second of all, yes, they know, what else did you do? David, just ask you, anybody else put into that position, what would you tell him to do?
But the way he
I'm not going to do it, even though it's the king telling me to do it?
But the way he told the story, it made it sound like he's excited, he's gleeful.
So this is why I'm moving in this direction, that David did not believe he was expressing the facts as they appeared, but was correcting them in a way in order to gain carry more favor with the king. At least to create a value in what I possess in my hand. What's the point of bringing it to David? Okay. Let's look in the beginning because it says... He sought out David. And it's not that David saw a guy who looked like he came from the battle and he said, oh, did you just come from the battle? So what's going on? It's not that David confronted him. He made his way to David. He knew what he was doing. He knew where he was going. Okay? So it's an interesting irony that Shaul lost his kingdom because he had pity and didn't kill off Amalek. And Amaleki finished off Shaul by having pity on him. Basically, it's at least the way he records it, I had pity on him. I couldn't see him die slowly there and get captured by the Philistine. Right? See what happens here on the next page in Shmuel Bet Rabbah. See this page like this? Happens every 5 or 6 prophet. We have this whole Rabbah. Right? Look at these 2 pages in a row. Practically no text. All of our next time you have to confess. What Rabbah does is that after every some section of Tanakh, they'll tell you what important messages, midos and deos, one can derive from that section. Okay. And then Shmuel Aleph Perkhes. Okay, so don't be so surprised when that happens, okay? Imagine how long this is. Okay. Alright, so I'm not going to go through the dirge that he sings in Perek Aleph. Okay. He eulogizes both Yonatan and Shaul again. I think that was genuine, it came from his heart, but it has to be a public statement, which is, he's a public figure. Don't be so amazed by it, okay? Especially those of you. Don't be so amazed that David has to make it so publicly known that I am extremely pained by the loss of Shaul. In Perek Beis, we have a list of his, some of his family members that he's and he sets up a kingdom in Chevron. Right? David's first kingdom was in Chevron for 7 years. Right? Chevron is in the heart of Yehuda. Yerushalayim is all the way in the north of Yehuda. Now you see why he moved his kingdom after he was considered king by everybody. He wanted to go back towards Binyamin to make the previous kingdom, kingdom's tribe, feel more part of the things. More part of it was indeed a city that would unite the nation more. Right? Remember that he was married to the daughter of the king, but she's been taken from him. She's been living with another man all this time. Right? Remember Michal and Pal Kilmayish? Right? So, David sets up a kingdom in Hebron, but there's another king who's ruling still in Binyamin. His name is Ish-Boshes. He was crowned by Avner. And then you have to ask a simple question. Avner, you think that Ish-Boshes is better material for king than David? How do I know that Ish-Boshes is not good material for king? Well, I never heard from him in Shmuel Aleph. Everything is about Yonasan in Shmuel Aleph. Rabbi Yonasan is dead. He's the only surviving son of Shaul.
His the man who's embarrassed.
Yeah, that's good.
He's shy.
Plus, when he's assassinated in chapter 4, he's taking a nap in the afternoon. I don't want a king who takes naps. What?
It was Avner.
Avner was Shaul's chief armor bearer, chief general. He was also Shaul's cousin. And he is, remember when David killed Goliath? Shaul turned to Avner and said, find out who this kid is. Discussed all that. So Avner is, we know him pretty well from Shmuel Aleph. And Avner crowns Ish-Boshes king of the covenant. You have to ask yourself, Avner, what's the matter with you? How could you put personal gain in front of what's obviously better for the nation? So if I were to give 3 reasons why Avner would crown Ish-Boshes. The first might be personal loyalty. His father was the king. Even if I think someone else is better, I have to go with the king. I have to go with my kid. Plus, he's my relative. He's my second cousin. It's better for me to have someone like that to be killed.
What was the context of this decision? He just decided to give Avner.
Well, the king died.
Shaul died, so Avner.
Does Avner know that David was crowned king? No, I don't think so. Who becomes becomes king when the king dies, his son. Even if he lost a few, right?
Ishbosheth was Shaul's son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, he was.
Yeah. And he's 40 years old already. Right? There's a third interesting reason given by Tosfos. Tosfos mentions this in the second parak of Sanhedrin. I would love the opportunity to teach Shmuel and actually have the time to learn the whole second parak of Sanhedrin. Ishbosheth, says Tosfos, was purposely hired appointed by Avner because of a pasuk in this week's parsha. Anybody know what Tosfos says? What's in this week's parsha that would make Avner crown Ishbosheth king over David? A prediction. A prediction that Hashem made to Yaakov in Parshas Vayishlach. It's right before the end of the fifth Aliyah, where Hashem tells Yaakov, I have great plans for you. Melochim mechalotzecha yetzeyu. Kings are destined to be descended from you. Right? He only had one son left after he heard that. Binyan was not born yet when Hashem told him that. You get it? Melochim mechalotzecha yetzeyu. Kings will depart from a child not yet born. Not from children you already had. That wouldn't be Michalatzecha Yitzayim. That's from already they were born from you. Kings are yet to be descended from someone not yet born. Got it? Okay. Who would that be? Binyamin. So Binyamin has to have two kings. Shaul, Ishbosheth. It was an oracle that Avner had to fulfill. Alright, it's good, Tosfos.
You think it's something... you're saying that... Actually,
took it upon himself to assure that this would be fulfilled. The simple shot is, he's taking care of his own skin. It's my relatives. I'm going to be loyal to my king. King dies. He doesn't know. It wasn't common knowledge to Israel that David would serve after him. Or at least right after him. Okay, everyone with me on that? Okay, so that's what's happening here. Now, but everybody could see, though, that David took the initiative to crown himself in Hebron. Why would David do such a thing? Because David knows he's been crowned. Right? The one who might be able to settle it is not alive. Who would that be?
Shmuel.
Right? So David is in Hebron. It's very popular. He's still the one who killed Goliath. When we get up to chapter 5 and we see that the people actually, with the death of Ishbosheth, go to David and say, David, you became of all 12 tribes because we knew even when Shaul was alive that you were the real leader of Israel. And David could be forgiven for saying, really? So why did you help Shaul always try to capture me wherever I went? Why didn't anyone stand up for me? Why did I have to go to Moab where my whole family was killed? And then I had to go to the Philistines. And they said, yeah, but we didn't know if Shaul was killing everybody. If we weren't, you know, if we did anything for you. You know? But if you really thought I would be king, wouldn't you like to curry good favor with me? Well, if we do, you know, Shaul made a good end. Well, okay. But what it does show is that the people didn't understand that David will be king. Remember someone in Shmuel Aleph, a woman who was quite sure of that?
Abigail.
Right?
So that's just confirming that it might not have been Avner's fault, is what you're saying. I think this. This is just confirming that it might not have been Avner's fault to reasonably.
Yeah, okay.
To not know that was
Avner is. Yeah, I mean, whether it's an oracle, which is certainly not his fault, he's just trying to fulfill the prophecy. Or he's being loyal to his family member. So what happens in chapter 2 is the second word, which is competitive. Competitive. What does this mean? What's that to do with our story? They have a competition, a game, some kind of game, between Avner's men and Yoav's men. Yoav is David's nephew, his sister's son, who commanded David's troops. And they had some kind of competition. The nature of this competition is not quite clear at all. It's mashma that it was not meant to be bloody.
12 against 12. That's how it starts. Apparently, a lot of people in attendance, a lot of spectators, right? And it just says l'sachek, just to play a game. The game was probably, as the Mefarshim explained, some kind of capture the flag, or, you know what I'm saying, some kind of war game.
Sounds like a game of football.
Could be paintball, could be all kinds of, whatever is on your mind, whatever you think it is, to show supremacy. What was the purpose of this game? That's quite clear. To show the masses which side. Now, Avner's side commands all the tribes. David is just Yehuda, right? And yet, you get the best of your people, I'll get the best of my people. We'll have a competition to see who's best suited to protect us from the Philistines. That's our main enemy right now. Who is best? How can we best serve the nation, either through someone on Yehuda's side or someone on Ishbosheth's side?
This happens in Perek Beis.
This is Perek Beis. Both of Perek Beis is on this topic. Right? They said, let's get up and play, they said. You're familiar with when it says that Yishmael was mitzachik, and that's why Sarah wanted him out of the house? Right? Remember what Rashi says there? What to kick him out of the house? Just because he was mitzachik. Right? So Rashi says because mitzachik means Hozara by the Ego. It means Giloy Arayos by Bihinei Yitzchok Mitzachik Esvishkoishto. And it means murder here. Okay? Got it? So Pasuk Yedal, Yisachaku Lefaneinu. Let's play some kind of war game, derech schok, in order to see v'nire mi yeda midarchei hamelchama yoser. As Radak writes, who is better capable of saving us from the Philistines? So it was, as Pasuk Tezvov says, 12 against 12. 12 from Ishbosheth, 12 from David. Okay. On Avner's side, we don't know anyone on it but Avner. On David's side, we have two people we know by name, Yoav and a man named Asael. Probably Avishai was on the same team. Right? Asael is the younger brother of Yoav, who the Tanakh says about a certain physical prowess of his, he was as fleet-footed as a deer. Almighty. Right? And apparently you have different you know, extratigo. You have 12 different types of things. Extratigo is 12, 1 through 9, a spy, a bomb, whatever, I don't know. But yeah. So it's 1 through 10 or 1 through 9, I don't know. But so the 12 different levels, but if you're on lower level, don't chase it. Right? Avner is probably the captain of his team. And Asael, a lower level guy on David's team, chose to chase after Avner. Apparently it's, I remember seeing games like this. Everyone has to wear like a certain color flag out of your pocket. And someone has to grab the flag without you touching it, something like that. And so if you grab the flag, I have to make something up because it's not quite clear from the story. But what I do know is that Asael was chasing after Avner. And Avner says, Asael, turn away from me. Chase after someone else. I'm beyond your pay grade here. Don't run after me. You're making a mistake. And Asael keeps on pursuit. Avner two more times tells him, this will not end well for you, Asael. Chase after someone else. Turn right or left. And Asael kept on hot pursuit. At which time, Avner quickly turned around, held his ground, and it doesn't say it was a sword, but he held a... Because it doesn't appear that this was meant to be with lethal force.
Something blunt.
something blunt he held out, and Asa'el ran right into it with such a force that it punctured all of his organs, and he just fell to the ground dead, with a huge pool of blood collecting all around him. Right? In other words, however you want to understand what I just described, a game that was not meant to be lethal turned lethal. And when such a thing happens and you have lots of spectators, what do you think took place?
Mass hysteria.
Hysteria. The spectators started to get involved.
But whose fault was it?
Oh, we'll get to that. We'll get to that in chapter 3. Huge piece of Gemara in the fourth parak in Sanhedrin about this. Right?
It would be great to learn Shmuel Beis and Sanhedrin at the same time. So, the spectators got involved, and by the time the dust cleared, and you're not even going to believe this, you want to see inside, 380 people died. This is a bad soccer match in Argentina. Right? I mean, even in Europe, they have these riots. In fact, I don't even think they let people sit in the same part of the arena. Now they have the arena cut off into two parts, right? Is that correct? Yeah. The Red Sox fans and the Yankee fans.
A few hundred people died in the Vancouver riots.
I'm sorry, what?
In the Vancouver riots a few years ago.
In Vancouver?
Yeah, the hockey team lost in the playoffs or something.
Is really a few hundred? Not eight, six?
No,
a few hundred?
They're rioting for...
crazy. Alright, so, but that's what happened here. Okay? It became violent and 380 people died. Get this? 360 from Shaul's side, 20 from David's side. And it became quite evident that David's men were better suited for soldiering and protecting. That's all. That's the whole thing. What emerges from this story, though? What? Give me. I use the word competitive because it's clearly the point of the chapter is to show there's a competition between the two sides, and look what happened. But there's something. There's chaos. It's chaotic because there's no clear king, and that's a message we already had from Shmuel Aleph. Remember, right? The chaos of Sefer Shoftim, but there's no king. There's no ruler who takes the place of the previous king, right? Chaos. How can you have a kingdom like this? Right? But Avner survived it, and of course you could imagine that Yoav has it out for him, right? You killed my brother, prepared to die. Right? So Yoav knows that vengeance is a dish best served cold. So he doesn't kill him right away, but he's going to look for an opportunity to do so. And if you were Yoav, that's enough of a reason to want to kill Avner. You killed my brother, right? You're also a traitor in my eyes. How can he be so stupid as to appoint Ish-bosheth king when it's so obvious that my uncle is better to be king than your cousin? Alright, so that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin I just told you about. But before we get there, I'm just going to wait another few minutes for our last minute to attend. I need you for me. I've got 2 minutes. Is that in chapter 3, you see the word conciliatory? In chapter 3, Ish-bosheth accuses Avner of sleeping with a former king, a former queen of Shaul's, former wife of Shaul's, Rizpah Basaya. She's the one who pushed away all the vultures from eating the flesh of those seven descendants of Shaul that David gave over to him in Gibeonim. Rizpah Basaya, a king's wife must be pretty, right? Don't you think? So Avner, who is the king's cousin, maybe he's about the same age, is accused by Ish-bosheth of sleeping with Rizpah Basaya. So Avner says, I don't need your accusations. By the way, what does it usually mean when you want to take the former wife of the king? You want to be king? You want to be king.
in Hamlet and in Macbeth. But when Adoniyahu, does this ring a bell to anyone? Adoniyahu, Avshalom took the 10 by the 10 wives, right? It's in Bilatia. But when Adoniyahu asks for the hands in marriage of Abishag HaShunamis, remember that woman we just read about in Torah a few weeks ago that warms David, right? And he said David didn't know her. She wasn't the wife of a king. She was just the warmer of a king, for goodness sakes. And Adoniyahu asks for her hand in marriage, and Shlomo uses that as an impetus to kill him. He goes, he wants her hand in marriage, and what does he want? The kingdom too? And when Achashverosh says Hakoveshes Hamalka Imi Babayis, what he really means is Hakoveshes Hamalkas Imi Babayis. You take the kingdom with not still in the house. If you want the kingdom, you take the queen. Got it? So when Ishbosheth accuses Avner of taking Ritzvah Basaya, he's basically saying, you want to take over my kingdom? And Avner says, I don't need to take Ritzvah Basaya to take over your kingdom. You're only king because I appointed you. Everybody in Israel knows it. In fact, I've had it with you. I made a mistake in appointing you. I'm going over to David's side. Idle threat? Who is that going to be a serious problem to? Yoav. Oh, he's precious for sure, but he's not here long. But Yoav. Because Avner would very easily take Yoav's place. Avner is a seasoned general, a seasoned soldier. Yoav is new to the scene, and Yoav would definitely be replaced by Avner. Avner is a huge plum for David. For Avner to go over to David's side would be a huge, huge boost to all of his political aspirations. So Avner gets a message to David. He says, David, I'm defecting. If an Iranian would land a plane in Israel and say to Israel, I want to give you over all the technology of Iran, just let me live here. I can't stay in Iran anymore. The first thing Israel wanted to do, are you a double agent? What do you do? What are you real? Are you for real? You want to hit the test then, hit the vet then, right? We're going to start next class with how David would do that to Avner. And we'll see conciliatory means that Avner was behaving in a conciliatory manner to try to get over to David's side.